Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
Hey, it's Latif from Radiolab. Our goal with each episode is to make you think, how did I live this long and not know that? Radiolab, adventures on the edge of what we think we know. Listen wherever you get podcasts.
Precious Lord, take my hand, lead me on, let me stand.
For much of American history, black women have filled the pews in churches, but they rarely made the pulpit. Or in the words of one female minister, too many women are, quote, having to content ourselves with cooking and frying fish when we felt the call to expound God's word, having to content ourselves with singing and playing the piano despite the sermon burning within us. So how does this play out? How do black women express their spirituality? And is the church a haven, a hindrance, or both? I'm Beth Furtick, sitting in for Brian Lehrer. Joining me now to discuss this are two guests, Marla Frederick, an assistant professor at Harvard University, where she teaches religion and African American studies. She's also the author of Between Sundays, Black Women and Everyday Struggles of Faith, which was published by the University of California Press in 2003. And we're joined by Jacqueline Grant. She's an ordained minister in the African Methodist Episcopal Church and director of the Black Women in Church and Society program at the Interdenominational Theological Center in Atlanta, Georgia, where she's also a professor of systemic theology. Dr. Frederick and Dr. Grant, welcome to WNYC.
Thank you.
Dr. Frederick, let's start with you. You spent a lot of time for your book with a group of women in Halifax County, North Carolina. Tell me about the place and why you picked it.
You know, I actually went to Halifax as a part of a larger project with UNC Chapel Hill. It's called the North Carolina Public Spheres Project, and what we wanted to do is figure out how the economy of the region and the political structure of the region was affecting everyday people, and whether or not people felt that they could get involved in the democratic process to change their communities. So we were actually stationed in five different counties across North Carolina, and I was placed in Halifax.
And what's it like?
You know, it's a traditionally agricultural region, so their economy has been based on agriculture. And so with the changes and the increase of industries moving in, textile industries and hog farming industries, it's really become an area where people are working in factories for the most part, but often those factories in the last several decades have been moving overseas. And so you find a lot of people really trying to struggle to maintain living wage
and
jobs.
What are the demographics? How much black, white?
It's probably about 50% black and 50%, or they say 49% white, and then other statistic is 1% other.
And of the blacks in that county, what type of churches do they go to?
Predominantly Baptist churches and Methodist churches.
Okay. Tell me about the women you chose to follow in your book. So you had a few in particular that you focused on.
Yeah, I interviewed dozens of people across the county, but I focused on eight women. And they were predominantly older than 50 who had kind of grown up in Halifax County. Some of them had moved north and were return migrants to the county. And a number of them have children in the school system. And so they were just trying to make sense of how do I get a better education for my children when the school system hasn't been that effective in educating young black minds.
And were they all very active in their churches?
Most of them were tremendously active. The women I chose to interview were tremendously active in their churches, and they were active in other kind of religious settings, you know, attending T.D. Jakes' Woman Thou Art Loosed conferences, and so they were active in a number of different religious spheres.
What was interesting about your book is you called it Between Sundays, you're not just writing about what they do in church, but the way that spirituality crosses over into their lives, into the material world. Talk about that a little for us.
Yeah, my idea behind the book was that faith is something that people are kind of rejuvenated with on Sunday, but it's lived out Monday through Saturday. And so the first half of the book really talks about how women get involved in their communities, how they get involved in politics, what the public nature of religion looks like. And the second half of the book, Friday and Saturday, we're focused on issues of personal regeneration, which have to do with tithing and finances and how people manage their personal incomes. And then the Saturday chapter deals with sexuality and how faith informs choices about sexual partners and how one deals with issues of, you know, sex, whether it's related to their own personal issues or their children's issues with sex.
And you're looking at women because you're saying that they were not always promoted in the ranks in the church. And you even referred early on in your book to a skeptic named Lynn who wonders why women remain in an institution that often curtails their leadership, she says, and silences their voices. So were you finding that these women were staying with the churches and being very faithful even though or despite the fact that they were not welcome in the upper ranks of leadership?
Exactly. That women were involved, heavily involved in the church, whether it's on the deaconess board, or as ushers or leaders in the Sunday school program, but they more often than not were not ministers or especially not pastors of these churches. But they exercised leadership in other areas, which were, some would argue, were kind of just as effective as a pastor or ways in which they exercise authority over the purse strings of the church that affect how the pastor can manage the church. But at the same time, I interviewed women who felt extremely stifled, particularly older women who felt like the church, while they love the church and they love Jesus, they're excited for the young women coming up in church now because they see these women as having opportunities that they never had to preach or to pastor. And so they're excited for the opportunities that they're seeing these young women opening up, the doors that are opening up for them.
I want to bring in Jacqueline Grant because you're an ordained minister in the AME Church. Do you agree? I'm told that you've written that Black women are often viewed as second-class citizens in their own churches. Do you think things are changing?
Indeed, things are changing. We've had advancement of women, not just in the AME Church, but in other historically Black churches. And in churches that are predominantly white, Black women have, in some regards, moved up the ladder in some churches, having been elected to the top rank of the church, bishop in the United Methodist Church, Bishop Lee Teen Kelly, African-American woman elected bishop in the United Methodist Church, in the Episcopal Church, Bishop Harris has been elected, Barbara Harris elected bishop in that church. In my church, African Methodist Episcopal Church, in 2000, we elected our first woman bishop in the 213-year history at that point, Bishop Vashti McKenzie. And then again in 2004, we elected two more women bishops, Bishop Carolyn Tyler Guidry and Bishop Sarah Davis. Phenomenal historical statement. Now we have three women bishops in the AME Church, and we celebrate that. Women have made significant progress in Christian Methodist Episcopal Church, in African Methodist Episcopal Zion Church, though they have not elected a woman to the top position yet, that is, as bishop. But there has been some measure of progress at the level of pastor of local churches and the mid-judicatory called presiding eldership. But, you know, there's an old expression that says the more things change, the more things remain the same. So that in spite of the progress that we've made, that we do celebrate, we do recognize that women are still being stifled. Women are still being silenced in the churches. Women are still not treated as equal Christians, but yet still as second-class citizens in the church, second-class Christians. Women are still not recognized for the talents that they bring, the skills that they bring to the church in terms of capacity for leadership. Women are still being passed over for promotion. Women are doing well in seminary preparation for their work in the ministry, but they're still being passed over for less experienced, sometimes less experienced, less qualified men. So the problem remains, in spite of the fact that we can celebrate the progress, the problem still remains with regard to women's participation in the church. We still outnumber men in terms of membership. Estimates can range from 75 to 80% of church membership remains female, but yet church leadership remains overwhelmingly male, in spite of the progress that women have made at the leadership level.
We're speaking with Jacqueline Grant, an ordained minister in the AME Church based in Atlanta, and Marla Frederick, an assistant professor at Harvard University, who wrote the book Between Sundays, Black Women and Everyday Struggles of Faith. And I'd like to invite your calls. I'm Beth Ferdagan for Brian Lehrer. Have you been thinking about this? Are you a Black woman who spent your life in a congregation? And how has the church changed over the years? Did you leave? Did you stay? Do you feel women are getting ahead in the church? Please give us a call with your thoughts at 212-433-9692. That's 212-433-WNYC. Marla Frederick, because of your book focusing on these women in Halifax County, North Carolina, what were you able to learn from them? Were they leaving the church, or were they staying and feeling like they were still getting something out of it?
The history of the Black church has been that it's what sociologists call it, a nation within a nation, that it helps maintain a community. And the Black church in Halifax County, and I think in many rural regions across the South, it forms a kind of community net, so that many of the needs of the community, whether it's a celebration of a birth or celebration of a death or prayer for children that have gone off in the military, it serves a kind of serves as a family for many people. And so in the South, I think many women remain loyal to the church.
But does that mean they're religious?
Say that again.
Does that mean they're religious, or are they part of it because it's a community center?
Right. I think it's both. I think it's that they sense God's presence, right, in a church community, or they sense that they are connecting with the divine within the context of their congregations and their prayer networks. But I think it's also the fact that it serves as a surrogate family for many, or as an extended family, rather, for many people, where many of the needs of individuals and families are being taken care of. So.
And as far as taking care of people, I don't know if you want to jump in there, Jacqueline Grant, because you are a minister. Do you see that the church is playing a different role in how it cares for people today? And is this something that is affected by the fact that you're saying 75% of some of these congregations are women?
Yes. And my answer to the question, are women leaving the church or staying, is that some women are leaving the church. Many women are staying. The majority of women are staying. I still get conversations from women who have become frustrated in the leadership of the church. Women who are seminary graduates. Women who have been all of their lives committed to the church, but have become frustrated with the fact that they continue to be passed over. They continue to be ignored in terms of their skills and talents. So you do find every now and then some of these women who have decided that they must move on beyond the church. Some of them move from one church to another, one denomination to another denomination. And some few of them have made decisions to leave the church itself. But many more women are staying. Why are they staying? I think Marla Frederick has indicated many of the reasons that they stay. This is the community. This is the context of life. And women believe in the divine, believe in God, and God being active in their lives. Now, the other part of the story is that women have also learned how to, stay in their place, because they persistently, daily are taught that their place is to, at best, be the support for male leadership. And so women have learned that very well. So what you find is that not only are there male voices that hinder the presence of women in leadership, but there are also some female voices as well. But I think that you're right, Dr. Frederick. The church still provides a community for women to exist in. What we find is that in smaller churches, we do find more women participating in the leadership of as officers of local churches, et cetera. And the larger these churches become, then you find that there are less female participants at the top leadership of the churches. Why? Because they're, in terms of numbers, at least more male available to provide the leadership.
We're going to take a quick break, and I do want to come back to a longer discussion about the role of the women in the church and the role that spirituality plays in their lives. We're speaking with Jacqueline Grant, an ordained minister in the African Methodist Episcopal Church in Atlanta, and Marla Frederick, an assistant professor at Harvard University who teaches about religion and African American studies. I'm Beth Fertig, sitting in for Brian Lehr. You're listening to WNYC, AM 820 and FM 93.9. We'll be right back.
Precious Lord.
I'm Beth Fertig, sitting in for Brian Lehr, and we've been discussing the role of religion and spirituality in the lives of black women because Marla Frederick, an assistant professor at Harvard University, has written a book called Between Sundays, in which she explored how black women in one county in North Carolina carried the faith with them in different ways in their everyday lives. And I should say, we just got an email from one of our listeners, and we are encouraging calls if you have your own experiences you'd like to share at 212-433-WNYC. We got an email, which you can do as well, at brianlehrshow@wnyc.org. And this woman writes, "Hello, I'm at work sneaking an email. I wanted to ask your panel about women who encourage women to be second class in the church." And she says she speaks from personal experiences because she sees female relatives who join the churches and then begin deferring decisions to their husbands, referring to the paternal head of household, as she calls it. And she believes that these women are thinking that men should be the pastors, not women. And she wants to know if you've met women like that who wanted to push for higher roles in the church, but were kind of kept in place by the men in their families.
Of course. As I mentioned earlier, we have the problem of men being against women in leadership, women in ministry, women in leadership. And we also have the problem of women being against the phenomenon as well. Now, that's not surprising to me, because, in fact, women are taught in a system that we call patriarchy that women are to be followers of men, that men are strong and women are weak, and therefore women are to follow men and not provide leadership themselves. So my response to that simply is that women learn very well, and we have learned, women have learned to accept that second-class Christian position and second-class citizenship in the church. And, of course, there are women who come forth to declare that they have been called by God for leadership, and unfortunately, not only do they get resistance from the men, but they get resistance from women as well.
Well, there you have it from Jacqueline Grant, the minister in Atlanta, Georgia. Marla Frederick, the author of the book Between Sundays, did you see that in North Carolina? Did women complain to you that they wanted to get ahead in the church and they couldn't?
Absolutely. I talked to one minister who was never invited into the pulpit whenever she went into particular churches. And then I talked to women who did not originally support women in ministry. So that one woman said she and a friend went to a church service and they found out that there was a guest speaker and the guest speaker was a woman and they decided to leave the church, right? Because they didn't want to hear. They didn't believe that a woman should be preaching. But she also said something really interesting, and that is that she's subsequently started watching television, religious television, and she began to see women preaching on television. And she began to question her own teachings, like the teachings of her church. And so she decided that she had been misinformed all these years. And so now she supports women in ministry. So
has any of this changed because of the role of television? You know, there are so many religious stations now and broadcasts. Do you think that really is changing?
Well, I think what's happening is there's a cross-pollinization between doctrines and positions on the church as a result of religious broadcasting. So people are forced to wrestle with their own teachings and ask themselves questions that they may not previously have asked themselves, and to find legitimacy and authority from Scripture and from conversations with other pastors and leaders that they may not have been in conversation with before.
What about the role of T.D. Jakes, the minister who started that program, Women Thou Art Loosed, which refers to Jesus commanding a distraught woman to lay down her burdens? Do women find this empowering, or do they wonder, well, why is a man teaching us this?
Well, I think a number of women, premise of T.D. Jakes's Women Thou Art Loosed is to find the brokenness in women, the issues of sexuality and abuse, and to help women find redemption in those places. And I think for many women that has been helpful. I think some of the other critiques is that Jakes does still preach a very, he's non-traditional in that he allows women to preach and he invites many women preachers to his conferences, but he's also very traditional in the role of a wife and a husband and what those leadership responsibilities should look like behind closed doors, behind a husband and a wife's closed doors. So,
well, we've gotten a few calls. Kay from Brooklyn, tell us a little bit about your experience in the church.
Well, I grew up in a Baptist household, and I also grew up in and around other Pentecostal religions. And one of the things that I noticed with a lot of young women is that because they were constantly preached the letter of the Bible, Corinthians, the head of the church is Jesus Christ, and the head of, you know, the woman is a man, that they ended up using the church not necessarily to be within it, but to operate on the periphery in women's retreats and spiritual groups so that we could network as women. Because one of the problems many of us young women had was the dichotomy of the real world, which many of us are single parents of and heads of households, mm-hmm. versus the church, where, you know, here you're having this dogmatic, you know, literal biblical view that literally you have to follow the male leadership, but where is the male leadership in your reality? And, you know, in essence, many of us have turned to, I wouldn't say necessarily alternative spirituality, but an alternative, more open, focused spirit of the Bible, focus on the Bible, with networking between women's retreats and other Christian-oriented things that were more inclusive and less letter of the Bible. That has been my experience lately, that a lot of the young women in my generation have been doing.
Well, Jacqueline Grant, you're the minister, and Marla Frederick, what have you seen?
I think that things are changing, and I think the caller is correct. There are other options for women these days. The preponderance of conferences that are being sponsored across the country by leading women, such as Cynthia Hale here in Atlanta, or Margaret Elaine Flake in Jamaica, New York, Claudette Copeland in Texas. So these women are beginning to have their vibrant ministries and are, in fact, giving women leadership options. Not only that, but women are experiencing, I think, more women in the pulpit at the local levels of the churches. And I think Marla is quite correct. When women encounter other women in leadership positions, many of them have opportunities then to change their minds. One woman said to me, Jackie, I used to say that a woman could not tell me anything, and you've changed my mind.
Well, thank you, Kay. Thanks for calling. I guess that leads to, I want to ask both of you, if you, the black churches are viewed as rather conservative, how do they treat single mothers, gays, lesbians who come to the church? Do you see that changing at all as they find these other outlets for women to be creative in their spirituality?
Well, I think there's really a twofold tradition there. In many regards, the black church doctrinally is considered conservative on some of these issues. But there's another tradition in the black church which promotes liberation, which is the strand that that fueled much of progressivism in the black church historically, as well as today. It's that strand that fuels what we call women who have adopted the theory of womanism to basically bring forth support for women in the church to move from the pew to the pulpit.
Marla Frederick, what did you see in North Carolina? Were they being more accepting of gays, lesbians, single mothers?
Yeah, I think the issue for the church as it relates to gays and lesbians, some people raise questions, the black church more homophobic than the white church, and I'm not convinced that one church is more homophobic than the other. I just think the issue in the black church as it relates to gays and lesbians and issues of sexuality in general is that the church remains too silent, and it is the silence that is killing people, right? So that you have these issues of HIV/AIDS in the church and women who are contracting various STDs. And those kinds of issues are not being addressed, issues of sexuality in general.
This kind of leads to another strand that you talked about in your book, which is that people have viewed the black church as having been divided into those who accommodate the status quo versus those who resist oppression, dating back to, you know, the civil rights movement and
exactly.
earlier. And I'm wondering, you know, where you see the church on that spectrum based on what you were seeing in your studies of the women in North Carolina.
Well, I think in North Carolina, you'd see what Dr. Grant is talking about, just a spectrum of perspectives from very conservative to those churches that are really pushing towards a more progressive agenda. I think the more progressive churches are probably fewer in number, but you do see them. And those are the churches that are really in the thick of trying to transform the community as they try to transform the lives of the parishioners in the church.
But you also said that the individuals, even if they're not leading some big, you know, nonprofit organization, you know, or working out on the front lines, they're doing things in small ways between Sundays, as you put it, in their daily lives, helping, you know, the elderly who are staying in that community because so many young people are leaving, for example.
Exactly. That this, the issue of righteous discontent, something that Evelyn Higginbotham has written about in earlier Black women's church experience, that this issue of righteous discontent is an attempt to right ills in society, but there are also ways in which Black women are what I call comparatively empathetic towards whether it's elderly in the community or single mothers in the community or people who, you know, just can't make ends meet, turn the lights on or have access to getting to the doctor's office on the weekday. So there are ways in which people are constantly laboring on behalf of one another.
We got a caller, Ray, from the Bronx, who had something to add on that. Hello, welcome to the Brian Lehrer Show.
Yes, good morning. I am interested in, very much in what you're saying, and perhaps you've already touched on some of this. I am the great-granddaughter of a bishop of the AME Church, whom I'm sure Dr. Grant knows, Benjamin Tucker Tanner. And I left the church, the AME Church, about 20 years ago, and then now a member of the Episcopal Church here in the Bronx. And I left because I found not only not progressive enough, but also that you were chastised often for not coming to church every Sunday, and there was sort of a cliquishness with the women. I miss the church. I miss the music, particularly the spirituals. although we do have them in our church, and our church has a large number of African Americans and Caribbean Americans here in Riverdale. But I find it more progressive, warmer, and the ministry much more substantive. Now, this is not to cast aspersions on all AME churches. I'm sure if I'd looked around, I would have found something to my liking. But I also want to be with my husband on Sunday morning.
Well, thank you. I guess this is sort of putting Jacqueline Grant on the spot here, because you're an ordained minister in the AME church in Atlanta. What do you make of that caller's response?
Well, it's correct that Dr. Frederick indicated earlier that we find that there are churches, some churches that are more progressive than others, and that remains the case. There are churches who are willing to address the issue of women in ministry, women's leadership. They are able to see other ways of envisioning women and women's participation in the church, and there are others that are not. I think it's key that the caller indicated that perhaps she did not look far enough, and I would think that would be true. You do find those that are most conservative, and you do find the liberation tradition churches in the not only the AME church but other historic black denominations as well.
Marla Frederick, I just have one quick question for you before we wrap up, because you spent so long studying the women in the churches in North Carolina, and you talked a bit in your book about your own experience growing up in the church. You said that you learned more about sort of the social hierarchy of women as you were working on your book, that for a long time as a child you thought that all women dressed up to go to church and put on hats, but then later you learned that there was a significance to the hats that the women were wearing. And I thought that was very interesting, because that's one of the most striking things that we all see in many of the black churches is the array of hats on any given Sunday. And you say there's actually some women wear these hats as a sign of their role in the community. Can you talk about that, please?
What I was trying to say in writing about that is just that one of the things that has happened in the church is kind of a de-emphasis on, to some extent, on dress and appearance, so that things are much more casual in contemporary churches. But that in traditional churches, there was a significance placed on hats and decorum and stockings and shoes. And one of the things that came across to me was the ways in which women find dignity and self-affirmation and respect in the church and in their roles in the church.
The hat a sign of that, that they are feeling that they are more respected or that they want to be taken more seriously by wearing the hat?
Well, it's different for different people. Certainly, there are women on the mother's board who would never step into the church without a hat on, right? And then there are other women who dress for fashion and wear hats. And so I think oftentimes it's a sign of respect and dignity for older women in wearing hats.
And do you think the more casual culture is more inviting to younger people?
Absolutely. Absolutely.
And yeah, you're seeing that maybe that could be an aspect in which the black church becomes more inviting to a younger generation?
Right, that many more people, and I think some of the theology is kind of lining up with this, that there's an idea that church is not about how one dresses, but it's about what's happening in one's heart, right? So that there's a less emphasis on outside appearance and more an emphasis on what's happening on the inside. But there's also, just a rich tradition of black folks not having the nice dresses and suits to wear to church or to wear during the week. And so that Sunday became this day that you could dress up, right? Because you weren't having to do the kind of hard labor work that you have to do during the weekday.
From Monday through Sunday, black women are Janes and Susies and Bettys. But on Sunday, we are Miss Jane, Mother Susie, Mrs. Jane. There's a different level of being, a different level of affirmation of who you are that you get in the church that you don't get in the larger society. You don't get on your job. because you're still victim of racism and sexism that expresses itself in daily life. But on Sunday morning, you become a well-respected member of your community, of your church community.
Well, thank you so much. We're going to have to leave it there to get on to our next segment. My guests have been Marla Frederick, assistant professor at Harvard University and the author of Between Sundays, Black Women and Everyday Struggles of Faith, and Jacqueline Grant, director of the Black Women in Church and Society program at the Interdenominational Theological Center in Atlanta, Georgia. She's also a minister in the AME Church. Thank you both so much for joining us this morning.
Thank you.
You're welcome.
Thank you.
Well, well, well. Oh, oh. Ha. Yeah, yeah. Precious Lord.